Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So there's only one place to start, Conor, and that is the absolute fix that is the Connacht Senior Football Championship. Outrageous. Emlyn Mulligan kicked this all off on Monday evening. And on first view, Emlyn might have been onto something. It was Connacht chairman John Murphy. He's only the new Connacht chairman, so he probably didn't do too much live TV and draws before. And he pulled out a canister, fiddled with it, and Marty wasn't finished talking. He put it back into the canister and shook it around. And who came out? Leitrim came out to play Mayo or Sligo. Now, the Leitrim people, like Emlyn Mulligan, are saying this is a complete fix. That was a warmed up Galway canister or a warmed up Roscommon canister. And we cannot have them playing Mayo. We'll throw Leitrim to play Mayo like lambs to the slaughter. Thoughts?
Well, can you just leave us alone, will you? You know, just because like the Leinster Championship hasn't been competitive, you know, it doesn't give you a right to be, you know, accusing us of a skullduggery in Connacht. A man makes an innocent mistake. You could clearly see that Marty Morrissey was still talking over him. He wasn't finished his sentence, so John dropped the canister back into the draw and then completely legitimately pulled Leitrim out of the draw then 10 seconds later. But of course, listen, there's accusations. I was reading my Mayo News this week, Willie, and said that a number of high-profile GAA personalities have taken to social media to voice their criticism, including former Roscommon goalkeeper Shane Curran, former Leitrim star Emlyn Mulligan, and ex-Leash footballer Colin Parkinson. So just listen, Willie, I'm here to tell you to leave us alone.
Jesus, like, I mean, I did the opposite than that. What are the Mayo News talking about? Like, I mean, I actually, when I had a look at this, I went, okay, right, I need to see what happened before it. And I looked at it a couple of times. And poor John Murphy's had to clarify this. He's been contacted by different media outlets. And he said there was nothing untoward. I was running a bit ahead of Marty and I just picked one out as he was speaking and I put it down. The other side of it, there were 8 to 10 people around the place with producers, a prop guy, a cameraman, a Croke Park rep. It's a lot about nothing, really. And these things can take off because when I looked at it the second time, he did pick it up. Marty hadn't finished talking. He dropped it back in and then he wanted to reveal the piece of paper just as Marty had stopped talking. Now, the mistake he did make was putting it back in and shuffling it again. He could have just, if he had more experience, he would have just kept it, would have taken it out, held it in his hand until Marty stopped talking and then opened up that Galway warm canister.
yeah. Well, like, so John Prenti was asked about it in the Mayo News, actually, and John Prenti obviously would be a veteran of these things and was saying how, you know, like these draws, there's a load of rehearsals beforehand, you know what I mean? So like he said, John Prenti was saying there's no possible way it could be fixed. And to be fair to John Murphy, as you said, I think it was his first time and he did look a little bit nervous, to be honest, but I feel for the man having to field phone calls about it afterwards. But I suppose that's there was a little bit of tension on it, so that's why you had to do it. But I like, if you're looking for skullduggery in draws, Willie, like just around Christmas time or just before Christmas time, there was a lot of club draws doing the rounds on WhatsApp, videos of them, and there was far more blatant what looked like skullduggery to me than what John Murphy might have been guilty of there just on the other evening.
Yeah, so from our point of view, it was all above board and it was a big deal about nothing. And in fairness, let's give Connacht chairman John Murphy, a very honourable man, and to think he would be cheating live on TV. If you want to cheat, do it on the radio, right? So the Ulster Football Championship, probably Connacht and Ulster, the big story in Connacht is obviously Mayo. Galway play Roscommon in one semi, and you'd imagine Mayo should come through after the final there. So it's a very good draw for Mayo. Ulster Football, big probably one out of that is Cavan playing Tyrone. You'd imagine Cavan, the holders, are going to go out early. Donegal and Down drew each other in the preliminary. We'll be talking to Paddy Talley in part two about the draw and a lot more as well. It used to be a huge panic if you were drawn into preliminary, Connor, because I think it was years and years, like decades since it was done, that a team went straight through. Like, I mean, it's hilarious. It's you can win it with three games, but that one extra fourth game meant this was almost an impossible task. But thankfully, Donegal did it in 18 and Cavan did it last year. So it's not as big, an obstacle as it used to be.
It really was the kiss of death, Willie, wasn't it? If you happened to be drawn in the preliminary round, and it just kind of all tied into, it's probably dampened down a little bit in the last couple of years, especially because Cavan and Donegal. But like, it just upheld the Ulster Championship as the toughest championship in the GAA. Now I know the Munster Hurling Championship would have a lot to say about that, but no, it doesn't. It there was no real Tyrone Cavan for me was the standout again. I mean, with all due respect to Cavan, I would say that, you know, given that there might be a couple of counties eager to maybe knock them off their perch, and Tyrone with Brian Duher coming along will be kind of eager to make a stamp as well. So that's the standout. But you're right, the preliminary round isn't as much of a gauntlet as it used to be, I don't think.
Yeah, Fergal Owen, obviously, and Brian Duher. I don't want to be too dismissive of Cavan after the year they had last year, but you'd fancy Tyrone to be favourites going into that one. Munster Football, you'd have to just spare a thought for poor Colm Collins, who committed to an 8-year last year and has drawn Kerry in the quarterfinal. Like, that's the end of Clare in the championship. Straight knockout. I'll give it one more year, says Colm Collins. I've drawn Kerry six of my 7 years in charge. It's not going to happen this year. I get a little bit of a run. Maybe a Munster final. It'd be a lovely way to leave them after 8 years. Kerry quarter final. Boom. And then I was just looking up at who they have. They're in the Division 2 South. So they have Cork, Kildare and Laois in their Division 2 South. So like that's Colm Collins' four games in charge of Clare. Well, they might be in a promotion or relegation match in the league, but Cork, Kildare, I'll leave Laois out of it because that's a 50-50 game. Cork, Kildare and Kerry are three of their four guaranteed games.
Yeah, well, you said you'd leave Laois out of it. Willie, I know like Cork won the Munster last year, got to an they didn't win the Munster. They beat Kerry last year, they got beaten by Tip, but Cork have been, you know, they're coming from Division 3, have been quite inconsistent. And then Kildare, I mean, like Kildare, no more than Armagh, are a team that you've championed a lot in the last couple of years, Willie, and then have flattered to deceive at a lot of different, you know, at a lot of different levels as well. So I tend to agree with you on the face of it, but I wouldn't necessarily hold Cork and Kildare maybe in the same esteem as we're holding Kerry for Colm Collins this year. I think there might be something in it for them, but I've huge sympathy for him. I mean, the huge problem with Munster used to be the fact that the draw was seeded, and now it's not. And then, you know, Clare can still draw Kerry six times in 8 years, is it, or something like that? So, yeah.
The interesting one is the Leinster Football Championship. Like, it's a waste of time. We're not talking about that because Dublin are going to win it. But they didn't draw semi-finals. And I don't know, is that not to demoralise the likes of a Laois or a Westmeath to say, right, Laois play Westmeath, which is a 50-50 game, exciting, all that. You know, you win that, then you play Dublin. It's like, oh, God, I'm going to America. Like, obviously, we can't. But I don't know, is that why they're holding off on drawing the semi-finals? I think the Ulster final haven't drawn the semi-finals either. We don't know who that's going to make up. The other two provinces have.
Yeah, I can only imagine that's a very relevant point, Willie. No manager is going to admit to it. But if you're serious and you're realistic in the back of your head and you see that in the draw, that like if we win our you know, if we win our quarter final and we're coming up against Dublin, there's going to be a small element in your subconscious that's going to be like, well, you know, what's the, are we better off actually losing, you know, the first game because we don't want to take a hammering off the off Dublin in the semi. Like I said, no player is going to have that attitude. You know, they're definitely not going to say it publicly, but it definitely, you know, it's definitely going to get into the back of your mind. But yeah, it's again, we just said that there is a word talking about because Dublin are likely to be a cakewalk again. But there's some outside of Dublin, there are a couple of interesting matches, which makes the case again that, as you say repeatedly, outside of Dublin, the Leinster Championship would be actually quite competitive and interesting.
Yeah, exactly. The hurling draw is interesting enough. I think the Munster Hurling Championship, you couldn't have probably picked it better than it is, because you've got a preliminary between Waterford and Clare, which would be a really good competitive game. You know, you've got the potential for Liam Cahill, if Waterford win, to take on Liam Sheedy in the semi-final, because the winners of that play Tipperary, which is a great mouth-watering, or else you've got a Clare-Tipperary, which is a big derby. And then on the other side, you've Limerick against Cork. And for me, Cork, with their style of hurling, are probably the team that might give Limerick most problems down in Munster. So if you handpicked the Munster Hurling Championship, I don't think you could have picked it any better. It's a fantastic draw. I think the Cork one is interesting. Donal O'Grady's in with them now this year, and I want to get Kieran Kingston on the show to talk to him, because he's promised me an interview when everybody gets back, because he's changed the squad around. So obviously I'm saying Cork style would cause Limerick problems, their possession based style, but maybe they're going to change that. Like I said, Donal O'Grady is in there. Anthony Nash is retired. Stephen McDonald's retired. Conor Lehan has gone off the panel. I don't think he retired. Christopher Joyce is gone off the panel. I'm not sure that he retired. Aidan Walsh, everybody thought he retired. He has confirmed this week that he didn't retire. He said, maybe some people don't know, but I didn't retire. I was told I wasn't part of the plans going forward. I was hoping to get another year or two out of it, but it wasn't to be. It's something I'll have to get used to. So, there's definitely a focus in Cork of changing the squad anyways. Whether the style of play stays or not, it's hard to know.
Yeah, did we speak about that recently? I mean, Kieran Kingston was talking about the league and how he'd like more games in the league to kind of blood a lot of the younger players. So he seems to be going that way. And like, I was shocked. I didn't know that Aidan Wells retired, and then to find out that he's only 31. And then I was just reading about his run of injuries, and it has been pretty bad, to be honest. And if you want to play the style of hurling that's likely going to keep up with Limerick, do you know what I mean, who are obviously the standard bearers, I suppose you need people that are going to be able to go at 100 miles an hour all the time. And you know, if Aidan Welsh is constantly kind of recovering from injuries, he mightn't be able to get back to that level. So, you know, it's nearly a pity for Aidan Welsh, because I still think he had a little bit left in him, but that's obviously the way Kieran Kingston is going. I've heard that said, Willie. I've heard Anthony Daly say that as well, that Cork are maybe best placed to kind of to beat Limerick. I suppose they were one of the last teams to beat Limerick. They beat them in 2019 as well. But I don't know, I hope to see a better challenge, but I just see Limerick being a cut above Everton and Munster at the moment. I know it's a really kind of appetizing draw, but I still see them kind of with relative comfort kind of coming through Munster again this year.
Yeah, myself and Anthony Daly, the two great hurling brains out there, Conor. thanks for the comparison there. The Leinster Hurling Championship was seeded. Galway and Kilkenny are separated, but this is still a very good draw, because you've Galway taking on Dublin. And you have Kilkenny taking on Wexford or Laois. Kilkenny obviously down Colin Fennelly this year. Wexford coming off a terrible season last season. They'll look to try and beat Laois, and they'd have no fear of Kilkenny in a semi-final. So I don't think that'd be any cakewalk for Kilkenny, especially a kind of a hurt Wexford, trying to redeem themselves after last year. So, the Leinster Championship is pretty exciting in its own right as well. So I was given out about the schedule for the intercounty season last week on the show here, Conor. I also tweeted about it, and I was pointing out the awful schedule that the hurlers have with the 3-week lead in time. And I got an awful lot of replies back on Twitter saying, why are you so negative? It's great to have the games back. Why can't you look on the positive? And this kind of nonsense, sometimes I feel supporters are very, very selfish when it comes to inter-county games. It's like, these players' welfare is not my concern. I want to see these matches. Do you know what I mean? I'm delighted for myself. This is fantastic. I can sit down in front of the telly and watch these fellas. I don't care if they get injured or it's a desperately hard schedule. schedule, and I don't even want that pointed out. That's not what I care about. Stop being negative. This was the kind of responses I was getting back. Like, and it is a desperately cruel and grueling schedule. And I was delighted this week for inter-county managers to come out and say the same thing. Like Micheál Donoghue said it last week on RT somewhere. I saw it on their website. He wants unlimited substitutions. And Mike Quirk and James Horan both agree with that. Mike Quirk had said, I never understood the logic of reducing six subs to five. I think they were reduced to five last year because of COVID, Connor. I always remember them being six anyways. I think that's the other way we should be going. You're asking fellas in a 32, 33, 34 man panel to train as hard as they can. You should be able to give as much time and opportunity to as many fellas as possible, really, without completely disrupting the flow of the game. Like, I'm all for unlimited subs. We've tried unlimited subs in the Auburn Cup. I'm sure you did in the FBD League and all the preseason games where the game isn't stopped. You're just running in and out a bit like basketball. I would hate to see it in the championship. Imagine trying to analyse a game, Connor, where did he go? Who's on the field? It would be literally impossible. And I just don't want it. But I think an exception this year for the league, knowing how little lead-in time the players have had and knowing how, you know, you need to gradually build this up. And if you've used your five subs and a fella is, you know, his hamstring's a little bit tight, geez, you need to get that man off the field.
Yeah, so for the league under these circumstances particularly, Willie, yeah, I'd be inclined to cautiously agree. So, like, what's unlimited? So you're still working with a panel of 26, right? So you'd have a sub goalkeeper. So you're probably looking at, what, 10 subs, is it? So I suppose the danger there is that the danger of having unlimited subs is that it turns into a kind of a challenge game feel and it kind of completely disrupts. But like these games are important. You'd hope that the importance of the league in both codes would prevent that from happening. You know, managers still want to win the games at the end of the day. And it's a matter of player welfare. That's why they want the unlimited substitution. That's it. But that I'd agree with you as well in terms of I'd only tend to agree with these under those circumstances because something Mike Quirk there said about completely disrupting the flow of the game is really important. Like I think that like when you have like I think six subs is a good number, and then part of the challenge then as a manager is to effectively manage those players throughout the game, so you know when a player needs to be taken off or you know when a player needs to be introduced to make a difference, rather than if you're being given unlimited subs, you know, you don't want it going like rugby where an entire line is, you know, is replaced after with 20 minutes to go, and it does completely disrupt the flow of the game. So, but like for me, you know, water breaks are still going to be in, so it's going to be disrupted to, you know, to a certain degree anyway. So as long as it doesn't completely disrupt, you know, the flow of the game for the player welfare in this situation, for the league, yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, whether they'll do that or not, I'm not too sure. It also gives players a little bit more game time. You're on a panel of 30, you can only bring on five subs. You know, you really need to bring on five different subs for five games, you know, or whatever, four games to be getting your whole panel some sort of run. And it's a short enough season. Like, they all should see some little bit of game time. I think the increasing the subs for the league, because there's some big differences between this year and last year. Connor, like, I mean, last year the inter-county season started after a full club season. So, like, these lads were well match fit by the time the inter-county season. And trust me, club championship up to inter-county championship, there's a huge step up in intensity and fitness levels required. There's an extra 10 minutes to begin with, an extra maybe 15 minutes when you add on all the extra time we're seeing in the inter-county game now. So, like, I mean, it's a completely different ballgame. The ground is going to be harder. You know, the inter-county is going on in the summer this time instead of the winter last year. So there's massive differences. And you probably saw the news, worrying news from a Mayo point of view, is Aidan O'Shea got injured last night in training. It looked like a knee injury. Maybe we're not too sure. It was innocuous enough. But there you go. You just hope that this isn't something. I'm predicting that we will see a lot of injuries. Injuries, I was looking at some stats on the 42.ie that injuries were up last year, and that was based off the schedule we had last year, never mind this year.
Yeah, and that was coming in, as you said, off the back of a club championship. Listen, as you said, the step up from club championship to county is huge, but like at least county players had the grounding of the county championship last year to kind of build up their fitness, as opposed to coming from individual training on their own this year before being thrown into that schedule that we've just been talking about for the last few minutes as well. So that even kind of it makes player welfare more paramount this year. And we like just mentioned last week that the league is going to favour the likes of Limerick, for example, who are stronger and have bigger squads and are able to rotate. But like being able to introduce more subs might kind of level that playing field a little bit more. But just on Aidan O'Shea, really worrying news. Like of all the players that Mayo don't want to be injured, we don't want Aidan O'Shea ever to be injured. But this year, particularly given, you know, his level of experience and the fact that all the retirements we've had, do you know what I mean? Like I was just reading in the Mayo news there that he's played 58 consecutive championship games.
Yeah, I was just going to say to you, he never gets injured.
Hasn't missed a championship game since 2012. I hadn't realised that till I read it in the Mayo news. Like you know Aidan O'Shea is always there, but that's unbelievable going for a player who's as physical as Aidan O'Shea, you know, for the position he plays in, for the belts that he gets, do you know what I mean? To have that many consecutive championship games when Mayo have been in campaigns where they're playing like 15, 16 championship, you know, 15, 16 games a season is really impressive. So, you know, it's the rumour mill has been an overdrive. There was the immediate thought was might be cruciate. There's some are saying medial ligaments now, but we don't know. We don't know yet. And it's kind of pointless speculating until it's confirmed. So just so fingers crossed. But even if it is, he's looking at a couple of months out maybe anyway, and then we'll have to build himself up. So just fingers crossed it's not as bad as originally feared, but it's a blow anyway.
Yeah, look, you've Sligo and Leitrim first two games, you'll be grand. He'll be back for that. okay, so Orla Dwyer became the second Irish player to win the AFLW Championship after Brisbane Lions beat Adelaide Crows in the final on Saturday. And she joins us on the line now. How's it going, Orla?
Good. How are you, Con?
Very good. Very good. Come here, have the celebrations died down over there?
we had a busy few days there from Saturday until Tuesday, but yeah, no, we've been quiet the past 2 days, and we have our Best and Fairest Awards night tomorrow night, so everyone's really looking forward to that.
Right, okay, so to keep it going, to give you your medals very quick after the final, in the GAA you're waiting months.
yeah, no, it's great that it's all happened very quickly here, which is good.
And come here, what are the celebrations like now in Australia and Brisbane after winning compared to Tipperary winning an All-Ireland intermediate title? Like, do you bring the cup around and fill it up full of spirits and drink out of it, or is there owl stock in pubs singing songs? What's it like?
Yeah, it's been great. Very similar, big celebrations on both teams. But we actually stayed, because we were playing in Adelaide on Saturday, we stayed in Adelaide Saturday night, and we had a function down there and had to get up early and be at the airport by 8 a.m. for our flight back to Brisbane. So that was a rough one on Sunday, but came back to Brisbane then on Sunday, and we had another function with the club in a hotel near here. And then Monday was our Mad Monday, which is very popular with the AFL teams here. So we dressed up as a country. We were in pairs. We dressed up as a country. We went to the captain's house and we had a DJ there and stuff. So that was great. We were Scotland, so that was interesting. We were wearing the kilts and dressed up. But it was great. And then Tuesday night was the W Awards, which would be the equivalent of, let's say, the All Stars. So a few girls on our team got invited to them and came away with an All Australian Award and Goal of the Year. So delighted for them and looking forward now to our own Best and Fairest on Friday.
Jesus, yeah, you're having a fantastic week altogether. What do you remember of the final? You had an excellent game yourself. You had 16 disposals and 6 tackles.
It went so fast, the game. And like all finals are, I think the intensity was just much higher and the pressure. There wasn't much room to do much because of the way the game was. And we kind of expected that going in after playing our prelim final the previous week against Collingwood. We knew that the stakes would be high going in, and I think, yeah, it just came down at the end to who wanted it the most, and everyone on our team played superb and contributed and did their roles super, and some more than others, with having tagging roles on some of the Adelaide star forwards like Aaron Phillips and their midfielders who we had tagging to. So yeah, phenomenal. It was a phenomenal experience, I suppose, playing in front of a huge crowd down in Adelaide. I think there was over 29,000 Adelaide supporters and about 1,000, I'd say, Brisbane supporters. But you could hear them once the scores happened or once the tackle was made. The atmosphere was phenomenal.
It's interesting that you say those tagging jobs, because usually, well, I'm looking at kind of interview a good few of the men that have gone out there, and the Gaelic footballers are usually given that tagging job. They're played wing back, and it's I was told that it's the easiest to help you adapt. You're playing wing forward, which is technically a difficult position to play.
Yeah, I suppose this year I got kind of, last year I played in the forward line, and this year I'm kind of, yeah, more kind of on the winger role. So you kind of pick up, you get on the ball a bit more, which I enjoy. I know it's big with AFLW is you don't get as much touches as you would a Gaelic football game or a Camogie game as well, with just the rotations and the way the game goes as well. So, yeah, no, I'm delighted playing in that role, and got to, I suppose it was more like midfield, which I would play back home. So,
right.
Yeah, no, it's been great and stuff. And I, yeah, those roles are hard. And I think the players that do that, fair dues to them. And we have some phenomenal players on our team that do that to a T. So, yeah, it's been great.
Is it difficult kind of getting used to the midfield in the way the game is out there? There might be a little bit more kicking. So you're coming short for a hand pass like you might do in GAA, and the ball's going over your head and you're running up and back, and the ball is, you're spending a lot of time looking up.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just kind of learning the role as well. I kind of just do what I do in Gaelic. So I think it's just bringing that pressure and tracking up and down the field and getting back to help the defenders and being out for them, and also getting up to the forwards and being an option up there too. So, yeah, no, I really enjoyed the role. And I think from having the experience from last year of the few games, I think it really stood to me this year going into pre-season and then into the season as well. And just knowing what to expect, and even with the whole contact, which I haven't experienced before last year, getting used to tackling and being able to take the contact and knowing where it's going to come from as well is something that was new to me. But yeah, no, I loved it this year, and hopefully it can continue that way.
It's nice to see you're still kicking around the corner like in the GAA anyway. I saw your assist.
I don't think that will ever change.
I saw your assist. It was called an assist for Courtney Hodder's unbelievable goal, but I don't think I'm going to credit you with an assist for that. You were going for your own score, no?
Yeah, I think that's just the look of it then as well, with the way our forwards have, like, all the small forwards have been practicing that all year, that once we kick in a ball to them from the midfield or the forward 50, that they're just there picking them up and creating scores out of nothing, literally. So, yeah, no, very lucky to have such skilled forwards up there for those crazy kicks.
Come here. You went back out earlier this year than the other Irish girls. Would you put that down to your form this year, or explain why you went out earlier than the rest?
Yeah, it was definitely a difficult decision. But I knew that our pre-season started kind of end of October, start of November time, and I think being away from AFL and from watching my season last year, I knew that I kind of needed a head start, let's say, so coming into the team. So I was eager to get out and not miss as much pre-season as I could. So, yeah, it was a difficult decision. Obviously, we were still in the championship with the Tipperary ladies football and the Camogie, and we were in the quarterfinal. We got to at that stage. So, yeah, it was definitely very hard leaving them teams and decided to come out here. And it all happened so quickly as well. I had flights cancelled previously, and then airlines weren't flying to Australia, and it just was going around and around. So I think once the flight came up, it was 2 days. I had to let everyone know, literally. So it was just waiting for that to go ahead. And once it did, and I got out here and got my 2 weeks quarantine done and got back into the team, it was great. And I feel like I didn't miss as much. And I think it definitely did add to my season this year, and with the likes of the other Irish girls, you see they came out in late December and they had to do their quarantine in Perth, most of them, and at that stage they weren't allowed even leave the room for fresh air, whereas I got the lucky draw earlier when I came out, and I got to leave and go for walks and go down outside and maybe read a book or do some exercise. So yeah, I was definitely grateful to have that.
Right. So how much extra training did you get in that professional environment than the other Irish girls, for example? Like, I mean, you know, you would have got a lot of strength and conditioning done. You would have got a lot of recovery in between done. You weren't probably chasing your tail as much as the rest.
I suppose it comes down to, just being there first. So they, I think most of them girls came out of quarantine, I think Christmas Day or maybe the day before Christmas. Whereas I came out at the end of November. So I suppose I had that extra month and right. Just to climatize as well, to adjust to the Australian hot summers was huge too.
Yeah. Come here, you must have really wanted this because I was reading that some of the girls were initially asked, but you actually applied. It's cross-coders, it's called. So you sent in an application. It's something that you really wanted to do.
Yeah, I think... I suppose it's every athlete's dream really to get the chance to play professionally. And from seeing the likes of Cora Staunton, Ashley McCarthy, who plays for Tipperary as well, and Sarah Rowe, Ailish Considine, they all came out the year or two before. And I suppose we couldn't really watch as much AFLW then, and I didn't know much about it, but I just saw that these Irish girls were doing really, really well and were very successful with all their clubs. They were all getting games and they were all picking up the touches, disposals, and they looked like they were just fitting in perfectly. So, I said then that once, if I did get the opportunity, I'd definitely grab it with both hands. So, I applied for cross-coders and sent in some clips of me playing Camogie and Gaelic football and kind of just sent it on to Jason, who is manager of the cross-coders, and he kind of sent it out to different clubs here, and some clubs got back who are interested, and I suppose Brisbane Lions just came up then, and I suppose just went with them then in the end, and I'm so grateful that I did.
It was an inspired choice looking back now, but like, I mean, there was loads of interest in you once you sent in the clips and stuff, so you know, it's interesting that they're probably not seeing as many girls, you know, as they probably could. This thing could even get more popular.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if anything, this season with TJ Cahir showing the games in Ireland, there's been huge interest. And I know a lot of my friends and I know a lot of people have trying to get in touch and try and get out here, which is great to see. There's obviously a good area for Irish players to come out, and seeing how successful all the Irish girls are, I suppose, having those Gaelic traits and stuff and bringing that to the AFL, because a lot of the skills do transfer over, is huge.
It's an interesting one that you chose Brisbane as well. A brave enough one. Now, it's not that brave that you chose the Gold Coast, but at the same time, all the other girls would have been in Melbourne. It probably would have been an easier choice maybe to stay close to the Irish girls.
I suppose it was a tough decision to make, but I didn't even know Brisbane was really a city in Australia. I only heard about the Melbournes and Perth and Sydney. So it was great to get the experience to come out here. And I think it was just down to the way the club spoke to me and the way they talked about how I play and how my style could contribute to their team. And they had a real interest as well. Craig Starchevich, our head coach has a huge interest in the Gaelic football and Camogie, and I think he follows all the Tipperary Camogie and ladies football, and he sometimes knows the news sometimes before me, and it's great that he has such a great interest in it too, and I think that really helped to make my decision too, and just the club here, it's been great, and I'm really happy that I did decide to come here.
Yeah. So what's the plan now? My advice is do not come near Ireland for a long, long time.
I'm definitely looking forward to getting back to training back in TIP with the Camogie and ladies football. I see that they were able to go back training at the start of the week. So that's hugely exciting for them. And obviously very hard to get back into the team. I haven't picked up our earlier Gaelic football in a while. But I think being away from the GA scene and coming out here playing another sport that's new to you, you do realise how much you really love playing the Camogie and football, and you look forward to getting back to the team that you've been playing with since under 14 up, and seeing how the changes are happening and new younger players coming in. And I'm really looking forward to getting back to that. But I think I'm going to stay here for a couple of weeks, and we have a few trips planned and a few events coming up. And I suppose enjoy the time in Brisbane and see what it has to offer here. Because once you're in season and pre-season, it's very short season, so you don't have time to really go traveling or to get out much either. So it'd be nice just to relax and to get to see more of Australia.
Yeah, exactly. Go up the East Coast or something before you come home. You'll be home here long enough and nothing's open, Orla. So just don't do it. Stay where you are. That's my advice. Come here. Are you going to make this a habit? I know you're in UL in college doing PE, which might scupper it. But like, I mean, are you thinking of going, coming home, you know, for the foreseeable future?
I suppose I really haven't thought that far ahead. I'm kind of just looking in the present at the moment. But if it is doable, I'd love to be able to do all the sports together. But I suppose at times it's like this year with the coronavirus, it did get affected and you'd have to make that decision and stuff. But I suppose I'll just take it as it comes and see how long I can stay playing the sports for. And I know at some stage ones will have to give when I get a bit older, but we'll just see what happens. And my degree is obviously very important to me too. I've 2 years done of becoming a teacher and I've two left to do as well. So I'm looking into options and stuff about that. And I know that I want to be a teacher at the end of the day. So it's important to have that degree once I finish up playing. So just taking it as it comes and trying to organize it in the future, I suppose.
Yeah, well, that's true. But like, I mean, before I let you go, like, I mean, I'm not looking to know how much you're wearing out there, but I'm just like, the ladies game is getting bigger and bigger out there. Like, would there be a future potentially, you know, playing full-time professional out there?
I think that is the goal of the AFLW. Like, it's only a five-year season so far, and to see how far they've gone from the first season to the fifth season is huge. Even from last year to this year, I've noticed big differences as well. So, yeah, it's crazy to see how big it can get, and can it get to that full professional like the men's? I wonder at some stage. But I suppose the girls here working part time and semi-professional, I suppose they've just adjusted to that lifestyle, and it would be great to get to play the full professional. But yeah, I'm definitely privileged to even get to play out here at all and get paid. So yeah, no, it's huge, and it'd be interesting to see how big it does get and will it become more global as well. So I'm excited to see it expand.
You're only 22, so you've loads more years. It might happen before you're finished. Here, before I let you go, how come you ditched the bandana out there? Did you think it would get pulled off you? Didn't you not always wear a coloury bandana playing GAA?
Yeah, I brought it over with me last year and this year, and you're not allowed to wear it because it's not part of the uniform. So unless I want the club getting a huge fine every time I play, I have to ditch that. But I'll definitely be wearing the red one when I come back to pitch. I miss it.
Listen, Orla, thanks very much for giving us your time, and we'll see you home soon.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
Great stuff from Orla there. I don't think, Connor, anything will explain the draw and the love of the GAA. Now, of course, I'm not going to dismiss her family, which is a draw for Orla as well. But to say that she wants to come back to play GAA, camogie and football with Tipperary, she's on the Gold Coast. There is zero restrictions, and she's coming home to this godforsaken country, Connor, that we'd all love to get out of there because of her love of camogie and Gaelic football. It's just it blows my mind. That's the GAA for you. Conan would be crying if he was still on the show, Connor.
Yeah, but it's turning into winter over there, Willie, you know, so yeah, the weather is obviously going to be much better over here when it comes into the summertime. No, listen, in fairness, it's great to hear that, you know, she still has the pull, having the pull of GAA is still so strong after what she's experienced kind of down under. You know, a brilliant achievement as well. I was half hoping there's a big Mayo contingent with the AFLW clubs down in Australia as well. But great to see that somebody from Ireland got to win it anyway. But will it matter as much as whatever she might win this season in GAA, Willie? Not by the sounds of things.
No, I don't think so. Few retirements to get to here. Conal Keeney, our own Conal Keeney, who's a pundit on the show, he's finally retired. 20 years he's been serving the Dublin senior footballers and hurlers. 20 years, from 18 to 38. Which is incredible, really. And Anthony Daly was talking during the week. He said he was winning Leinsters with the footballers, but I remember making the point to him one night on a call that one Leinster hurling title would be worth all the ones he had. I don't know, he might have had five at that stage. He was a great player, and if there was one thing that was the catalyst for us kicking on in 2010, it was him moving over. It was massive. It seemed to fill the rest of the boys with fierce belief as well that Keeney was going to give up football, you know, and come across to the hurlers. Sometimes, like, I mean, he's just, even 2 years ago when Pat Gilroy took them over, he put in a performance in Parnell Park against Kilkenny, which was just absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. Like, he's a bit of a freak. Aidan O'Shea is a freak. Zach too, he's a freak. You know what, now, even though Conal's got a few injuries, these lads are just physical specimens.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, like, him, Conal Keeney, to me, at, like, 36 or 37, wasn't that much different from...
No.
You know, when he was maybe late 20s, early 30s, just as you said, a physical freak. And I always just, it was always brilliant to watch. He was just one of those proper, like, listen, I don't mean this to demean Conal Keeney's skill, you know, or, you know, accuracy as a forward, let's say, in both football and in hurling. But, like, what kind of most took me was just how much of a warrior he was in both codes. And that's, and you talk about the career that he had there with the county. I mean, like, How many times did Conal Keeney's season go into December and January, and, you know, over Christmas with Ballyboden as well, in both codes? So, like, I know he didn't win the big one. Like, he did get his Leinster hurling title when he made the switch. He kind of missed out on a little bit of success with the footballers when he left. But, I mean, when he looks back, what an unbelievable career.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I often wonder, like, would Kieran Kilkenny, Cormac Costello, Conor Callaghan, like, they're after winning another All-Ireland, a five in a row, like, would they be having a few pints after winning the All-Ireland and go, here, lads, will we give up and go over and try and win one with the hurlers? Will we do what Conal Keeney did? Like, I'd say they would, and then they'd probably wake up the next day with a hangover and go, Jesus, we were talking some shite last night.
Yeah, AIG are on the phone, lads. That's
what were we thinking? Thank God I didn't text Matty Kenny. I was nearly going to do it. Wouldn't be like, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, maybe not going as far as what I'm saying, but I'd say they definitely have a few drunken chats about, we have to do it, lads, we have to do it. I suppose
They're friends in the hurlers as well, Willie, and I'm sure, like, there's no shortage of conversations as well amongst those lads trying to get them over. And why would, like, after a while, I'm not just saying this from a county who suffered at the hands of the Dublin footballers over the years, but when you've had so much success at the football, why not try your hand at the hurling as well, especially if it's your first love? And in the cases of most dual players, hurling tends to be their first love. So essentially what I'm saying, Willie, is anyone with any hurling potential on the Dublin football team should move immediately.
I think Eric Lowndes is a good hurler too. There's a few of them, because obviously Dublin invested so much money into both hurling and football at underage. They all seem, a lot of them seem to be good dual players. Noelle Healy retired as well during the week. She ended up winning five All-Irelands, a player of the year. She's four All-Stars. She lost three All-Irelands before she won one, you know, which I often think when you see the, you know, them winning they're at four in a row, I think the women are now, that, you know, they kind of deserve it, knowing, you know, what it's like to lose them. It looked like they weren't going to get over the line. 10 Leinsters. It sounds like a list of achievements, that, you know, of the men. But I think Lindsay Davies summed it up for me with Noelle Healy. I'm a big fan of Noelle Healy. She's just a really exciting speed demon player who takes people on. And when she gets the ball, there will be a little bit of a buzz around her. You know, that type of a player. Yeah. That you might stand up off your seat. Lindsay Davey explained it well. She says, there's no better feeling in a game when you're out on your feet. Lay off the ball to Noelle Healy and just watch her take off up the pitch. Like, I mean, I love players like that.
Yeah, almost Jack McCaffrey-esque, like, I suppose. But, like, that game that you're talking about, Willie, that, so she lost three, and then of course the one that she wins was against Mayo in 2017 when she was she was player of the match, and she was player of the year that year as well. Like, Noelle Healy's only 30. Do you know what I mean? Like, I thought she had maybe more in her, but then you look back, you just listed off her achievements there. She's been playing senior for Dublin for 14 years. Do you know, I think she's won All-Ireland's a club as well. She won an All-Ireland club when she was down working in Cork. Do you know what I mean? So, like, she's probably packed enough in, but I'm sure there's probably inter-county players from other counties around the country probably not too disappointed to hear that she's calling it a day, because she was an incredible player.
She's a doctor down in Cork. I presume that's why she retired at 30. Like, she has plenty more years probably to give, but I thought she transferred down to that club because she's a doctor. I think she's a doctor down in a hospital in Cork.
So, as far as I know, with
anaesthetist. Peter Crowley is another one. He's only 30 as well. He's retired, and this is a bit of a surprise. Apparently, a little birdie told me this was kept very quiet because he'd left the players' WhatsApp group 3 months ago. So I don't know. Maybe he's only made it public. But he came back. This is, again, it's a surprising one. Like Noel, only 30. Noel, like we said, is probably a commute. Peter doesn't have a commute. He battled back from a 19-month cruciate knee ligament injury to get back on the team last year. Obviously, they lost the semi-final to Cork. You would think he has a little bit of unfinished business coming back this year, Conor, rather than saying, "Ah, look, that's the end of it for me."
Yeah, I just wonder what the conversations were with Peter Keane. Maybe they were similar to ones that Kieran Kingston had with Aidan Welsh. Because I think Kerry are going to miss him. I think I think he has had his injuries over the last couple of years. But we keep going back to it. We'll probably go back to it again this year. That centre half back is a big problem position for Kerry. And I think of all the players that have played there for Kerry in recent years, he was probably the most suitable. So I don't know if they got a solution to it yet, but to me, you know, as you said, only 30, you know, I think he had at least a couple of years left in him yet. So I'd like to maybe hear a bit more about that, but I do think Kerry are going to miss him.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, I mean, he was nailed on for centre-back. And interestingly, before he came back last year, Peter Keane was playing Shane Enright centre-back. That's who his choice for centre-back was. And Shane Enright has obviously retired since. He was on the show back in January. So, like, the number six position is way up for grabs. Jack Sherwood is the name that jumps out to me. Gavin Crowley might go from the wing into centre-back. But there's no, you know, there's no name that's necessarily coming to you that is going to go, you're going to go, wow. So, like, I mean...
Yeah, even Shane Enright, you know, to me, like, he could do a job there, but maybe not to the level of Peter Crowley. Gavin Crowley, I think, could play there. Jack Sherwood could play there. Have they done enough in the last couple of years to suggest that six might be a permanent position for them? I'm not sure. The other one, Tadhg Morley, has played there, but he's more needed at fullback. And Paul Murphy could probably do a job, but Paul Murphy, to me, he might be needed to man mark. Or Paul Murphy is a brilliant spare man, I think. And Kerry are probably going to have a spare man a lot of the time rather than, you know, a fixed position at centre-back. So, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what they do with that. But I would have had Crowley down for it. I would have had Peter Crowley down for it. So, I think it's going to continue to be a problem position for Kerry for at least this season anyway.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, I'll leave the last word to Davy Burke. He's talking about the Leinster Championship and he's given out about how it's a closed shop. That you can practically predict the four that's going to be in the semi-finals. And let's be honest, that's the same in every province. You could easily predict the semi-finalists in all of the provinces, really. He says, ultimately, we can probably tell you that who's the top four will be again this year. It has to be changed. There has to be a change coming. Now, there is a change coming next year, obviously, maybe not to the provincials, but at least they will be pulled away from the All-Ireland series, which is great. He says, otherwise, how is anyone going to break in? It's like you going up to a pub and the bouncer turns you away and says, regulars only. And you say, I'm only after moving to the area. How do I become a regular if you won't let me in? I'm sure a little anecdote that everyone listening can relate to.
100%. Davy Burke should have said something similar about the European Super League this week as well, to be honest. But I'm not going to be able to top that from Davy Woolley, so I'm not going to even try. So
yeah,
first time. Well said, Davy Burke.
Yeah, and I'm surprised Davy Burke doesn't know what you do in that situation is you get in there before the bouncer and you fall out past the bouncer. That's how you do it. And then he'll recognise you the next time. So, like, I mean, Davy's a little bit naive in that situation. Anyways, listen, we'll be back with Paddy Talley.
Advice he gave me back then was we were in the Glen Royal on a night out and I'd never met him before and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
It's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
So as we mentioned earlier in the show, Down have drawn Donegal in the preliminary round of the Ulster Championship this year. To get a bit of reaction to that, we have Down manager Paddy Talley on the line. How's it going, Paddy?
That's a bad column.
Hey, is it fair to say that draw wasn't too kind to you?
Colm, the Ulster Championship, no matter who you draw, is always going to be very difficult. But Donegal, obviously one of the best teams in the country, have been for this last number of years. So we expect a really, really, really tough championship draw. But you know, to be honest with you, it's a way down the line. The league coming up is really important to us. So that'll be our primary focus for the next few weeks.
Yeah, the preliminary round isn't as scary as it used to be, I suppose. With Cavan last year, Donegal in 2018, it used to be the case that it was impossible to go the four games.
Yeah, I don't know what the reason is for that. You know, you wouldn't think it should make an awful lot of difference, really. It's only an extra game of football.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, if you think about it, like, it even makes sense that the extra game would do you the world of good. And if you get a bit of a run, the momentum, it's always a good thing to have. So maybe the extra game is seen as a benefit. Certainly last year for Cavan, once they got on a bit of a roll, they were fantastic. So, you know, I don't think Squires should really make an awful lot of difference.
Yeah, they did. Cavan definitely kind of got on a roll, but you were very close to them. Like, I mean, a lot of people would say you should have beaten them that day. And then when you see what they did to Donegal in the final, you know, that must give you a lot of confidence.
Well, there was no fluke. You know, Cavan's been coming for a number of years. If you look at their track record, especially on the 21 level, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, they brought a lot of those players now are starting to blossom into really, really good senior players. And you could see it coming for a while with Cavan, and they hit form last year, you know, at the right time. Once they got the win against Monaghan, the belief they got from that, obviously, Monaghan, but like ourselves, were in a really good position at half time. We didn't close the game out, and we should have. Monaghan the same. And then they caught Donegal in the semi final and probably Donegal. I'd say Donegal, two big wins, Armagh and Tyrone, and maybe didn't see Cavan coming, really as strong as they were. But in all credit to Cavan, I thought they were fantastic last year, and they thoroughly deserved their championship win.
So you got back training on Monday night, Paddy. I presume you didn't leave it to Tuesday, you went straight back on the Monday night.
I was thinking about it on Sunday, but then I decided not to, you know. I've learned that lesson.
Yeah, definitely
have. We went back on Monday night. It was great. The reason is most of the clubs are back out again here. We train in club pitches and that as well, and just availability. So we're able to get a pitch on Monday night where the club weren't using it. So that's where the Monday night came out of.
What was the mood like? They were like new foals kind of running for the first time.
Tails up over their backs, Colm. Tails back over their backs. Well, in fairness, the lads had been out to their clubs last week, which was great. And that was really important for them. So they had a week with their club. They got the ball back in their hand. And then when they came back to us on Monday night, it was good. Now, there was a good anticipation there, and there's a good buzz about them. And this is, I think, they're just glad to get back out playing football. You know, you know yourself as being a county player, like, you know, a big part of your life's dedicated to your training and playing football.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the reason you do this is because you enjoy it. You don't see it as a chore or something hard. You really enjoy being part of that, and especially at top level. You know, you strive to become as an inter-county player, and then you want to make the inter-county team and establish yourself in the championship team. These lads are the same. They're no different than anybody else. And it was great to see them back out again. And I was happy with the way they wintered as well. They didn't seem to look after themselves okay too, which is very, very positive.
But I suppose that's the thing we were saying on the show last week, is the amount of downtime these lads would have in their day when they're just not used to it. They're used to coming and going and training and being busy. And is that the kind of feedback you'd be getting from them, like how bored they are?
I think anybody this last 6 months, I think we've all experienced that. You know, if you're involved in sport or anything, do a sport, you don't do it during the day because we're amateur. We do it at night, or do it in the evenings, or we do it at the weekends. You know, so during the day it's not too bad when you're working and you have things to keep going. But it's that evening, what do you do from you finish your work until bedtime? Normally those days are filled with your sport. And I think we've all experienced that, and how we dealt with it, and how we've been able to keep a focus on our football, and looking forward to it. I think it's been one of the challenges. But we have been in touch throughout. We've been keeping in touch with the players throughout the lockdown and ensuring that they've been doing bits and pieces of training to keep themselves right by themselves and just taking over. You know, so I think everybody's experienced it. Like, so, though, to be honest, we're having too many conversations about how, and then the players really felt they wanted to speak to me about an issue, like, you know, generally they've got on with it well themselves. So I think they want to put it behind them now and get on with their football.
Yeah, hopefully we're back without any more interruptions now. Come here, so your suspension is lifted now, right? So it was the 10th of February, I think that went from 10th of February, March, April. So you're back.
Yeah, I'm a free man. I was released from incarceration on the 4th of April. So that was a relief too, yeah.
Come here, what happened with that? So all I'm reading is that you're in a school in Newry. What were you doing?
I'm pleading the 5th on that one, Tom.
Plead the fifth.
Won't answer. Plead the fifth on that one. No, listen. It was quite innocent. I think we were supposed to go back on the 15th of January, and there was a lot of young players that we don't normally get an opportunity to see, especially when we thought it'd be, you know, go out and get a bit of a running program, show lads what they wanted to do in terms of a running program, a wee bit of. You know, mechanics exercises and various things, just to so that they can get on with the work themselves. Because we knew at that stage we didn't know when things were going to start, and we thought it was going to be a very short running. I think we were given a date when the start. I can't remember the official dates, but from I looked at it from the date I think it was the 15th of January, we were going to be back to our first match within 4 or 5 weeks after that. And we thought, well, if we give these boys a bit of work to do now, and then it'll help them take over. But we didn't really feel as if we're doing anything wrong, because the rules and the law in the north was at the time that because you're elite sport and you were staying in groups of under 15, and we weren't breaking any laws as such, we felt that it was being okay, but it wasn't in the GA rules. We're broken and we have to accept that, so we just had to take the punishment on the chin and get on with it.
Right. Okay. So it was a get together with like almost like the first session of the year to give a bit of information about what lads needed to do and stuff like that.
More or less, yeah.
More or less, and then the police arrived.
The police arrived. Yeah, the police service of Northern Ireland arrived to see us how we're getting on. So, but they, in fairness, Colin, there was no issue. You know, they didn't have any issue with what we're doing. We weren't breaking any laws, and
right,
they were satisfied with what they saw, and I think the word the guy said, listen, I don't want to be holding you back. Well, away you go, you know, to your training.
Right, so I suppose for that reason, that's why your suspension was reduced from the 12 weeks down to the 8, because you weren't actually breaking any restrictions. Maybe that's not the GA's business, I suppose, anyways, is it?
Listen, it's a great lesson. Looking back at it, if I had to do it again, I wouldn't have done it, because the GA didn't put the regulation out. There's no collective. And by the rules of the organisation, 7.2E or whatever the rule was, you know, I remember looking back at the rules that just if one or more people are asked to be at a certain place at a certain time at a certain date, that constitutes a collective training session. So I didn't understand the rules until I really started reading into it. But really, if you ask one player to be one place at a certain time, you've broken the rule.
Right, right.
So really, we hadn't really got a leg to stand on. We had to accept that we had broken the rule and just get on with it.
You might plead the fifth on this, but I'd say you sat back in your chair with a smile when you saw the Dubs and Monaghan getting caught recently.
Absolutely not. far from it, to be honest. I think that the whole thing has been, I think that it's become a bit of a circus, you know, and I feel for anybody who's gone through that process, because it's not a nice thing to be dragged through the press and be seen as being some sort of a lawbreaker and be some sort of enemy of the public, which we're certainly not. The GAA aren't like that, and anybody who's involved in it knows that. So, you know, it wasn't a comfortable position to be in, but I wouldn't take any joy in the fact that it was happening to Banty or to what's going to happen to Desi Farrell or Ronan McCarthy or anybody else in the same position. It wasn't a nice thing to be targeted with or to be. But listen, it is what it is, and we have to just accept it and move on.
Yeah, no, I meant in the context that they took the heat off you rather than actually, you know, I'm in complete agreement. Too much was made out of that altogether. You know, it's just been blown up completely, and it's not fair. Come here. So obviously you were coach of Galway before you managed Down, right? So you received some criticism towards the end, a lot of praise at the start, then a little bit of criticism towards the end. And like, I'm wondering, when you went in with Galway, and you're a well-renowned coach, and Kevin Walsh rings you. Is Kevin Walsh ringing you to say, I want you to implement this defensive system, or does Kevin Walsh ring you and say, come in here, you've got free rein to do kind of, you know, set up the team the way you want?
No, to be honest with Colin, it was, first thing I will say, it was an absolute joy to work with Baldy for a year, and really had a very, very enjoyable season. And to be honest, I thought the disappointing with Galway is we're so close. You know, we had beaten the National League final and beaten the Ireland semi-final by the only two teams to beat us were Dublin, like, in that year.
Yeah.
And in both games, I felt we could have won them. Certainly think we missed a penalty. We missed a really good goal chance in the semi-final in the first half too, remember?
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought that was really opportunity for Galway to go to an All Ireland final. So regarding the year itself, it was a really good learning experience for myself too. I saw a different way of doing things. I learned a lot from the environment Kevin set up and the team he had set up down there. But regarding my role within it was quite different. You know, Kevin had already been, I think he had 4 years under his belt maybe involved at that stage, at three anyway. And he very much had a system in place. He had his players in place. He knew what he wanted. He's a very, very focused manager, very well organised. So when I was asking to come in to do certain routines, it was more or less to look at what was going on and see could I add a little bit extra to it. And where he felt that I could add something was maybe just bringing a different mentality as much as anything else, you know, to it than maybe what he had. I suppose coming from a different, completely different perspective up on Ulster. You know, football's different. Like, the way football's played up in Ulster compared to how football's played in Connacht's different, you know. And maybe just bring a different type of thought process to it. And I think he just enjoyed the fact of bringing in new ideas, new ways of dealing with players, just ways on how to process the game plan in their heads as well. So there's a wee bit of that going on. But certainly, as regarding the way that Galway were playing, it wasn't an awful lot different to what was going on before. I think a lot of the criticism was quite unfair, to be honest with you. I don't know whether there's a notion that it was just a change in the way Galway played and took them away from a free-flowing type of football to something more structured and defensive. But, you know, really, really football has changed in any county that anybody that studied the game would study football's changed over the last 20 years or especially the last 15 years. Most teams now are defensive, they're organised and they're set up. So I don't think Galway would do anything different than anybody else. And I think that if you look at that year, they were still scoring heavily as well. Sometimes you need to be further analysis on some of these things to really understand what's going on.
I think that's it. Kevin Walsh gets very defensive about all that stuff anytime he's asked about, you know, the analysis of it. And I suppose looking from it, from kind of the show's point of view, or things we would have said, like Shane Walsh, Damien Comer, Ian Burke, Micheál Daly and these fellas, you see them back kind of tackling or in their half-back line. I think Galway kind of maybe... because they have such kind of exceptional forwards, it was maybe frustrating when people saw them back tackling and doing a lot of defensive work.
Yeah, but if you look at Dublin, you know, Dean Rock doesn't spend all the time in the full forward line, Kieran Kilkenny puts a shift back in there, or, you know, anybody, Paul Mannion, I remember watching Paul Mannion last year just having the ball on this in his own 13. You know, and now the Dublin one about out and out forwards as well. So let's make no bones about it here. Every county you're expecting your players to work, you want to see that. It's inspirational sometimes. You know, it's inspirational to see forwards working hard and putting a shift in, because years ago, remember you played really, you like to stay up in the forward and out of the way and when the ball went up, you know, you're happy to get it. But the game's all changed now. We're expecting our forwards to tackle back and try, you know, to do the hard work as well. And listen, You can make a lot of these things, but really, if you look at over the broader context of the game, I feel that every team has adopted some sort of a defensive strategy and understands if you really want to win competitions, you got to be tight at the back, and you also have to have the ability to score. And that's where Galway probably have it. You mentioned Shane and Damien there, Ian Burke and lads. They're immensely talented players. I think that, you know, if you look back to that year. Galway weren't that far away, and I think the balance wasn't too bad. I still think if we had to score the penalty against Dublin that day in the semi-final, you never know where that match would have went to, you know. Fine lines.
Well, that's the thing, and obviously there is the factor that wasn't there when I was playing is cornerbacks just take off now. So the reason Paul Mannion's going back a lot of the time is because he's following a man back rather than just deciding he wants to go back himself.
Absolutely. And you know, it's part of the system. You know, the United is, if you look at the wing backs are as good in the ball as wing forwards. And wing forwards are good at defensively as wing backs. You know, backs, yeah. You know, that wouldn't have been the thing years ago. But now you have to look at, everybody has to be really confident in the ball. Really good cornerbacks. You look at any of the top teams there. I always admired, you know, the counties that have boys in transition. If you go back even to, let's look at the Galway teams that won the All-Irelands back then, when you did like a Decky Meehan playing wing back. Like, sure, Decky Meehan's wing half back that time was a super wing half back, you know. Jack McCaffrey is a wing half back for Dublin, is as good as a half forward in anything. Yeah. You know, so yeah, and most county teams are set up that way, that you've lads who transition from defence to attack very quickly. And you have to have that. You know, the modern day game demands that, because the people that are going to have the ball in their hand, most are going to be your half backs, half forwards and midfielders. Just the way the game is moving now. So you have to have players, ball players in those areas. And if it means a half back finds himself in the full forward line, or vice versa, or half forward finds himself back on the goal line picking up a ball, sure, that's part of the game.
Yeah. No, it is. Here,
and that's what makes the game good.
Here's a question I wanted to ask you, because we talk about it on the show a bit, is say you want to leave three forwards up, right? Maybe one in front of two, or whatever way you want to split the three of them, and you have one cornerback that keeps bursting up the field and he's dragging your fellas out, and what you'd practiced isn't coming off. Like, do you always tell the forward to track him, like the Paul Mannion kind of thing, where he always will? And we talk on the show sometimes, why are you, like, not every forward is built like Paul Mannion, like an athlete. A lot of the cornerbacks are just trying to tire their man out. You know, at what point do you say to the corner forward who's not built like Paul Mannion, leave him off, pawn him off to someone else, or is that too difficult within a game?
Not really, no, and that's a good point. And ideally, you want your boys maybe to drop off and pass on the man to somebody else. But generally, you know, if you look at a cornerback, if you think of that situation and the cornerback goes up the field and to support the attack, the reason he's left there is because somebody's picking up his man. That'd be fair enough to say.
Well, not always. You know, sometimes they're trying to. I think sometimes they're trying to drag the good corner forward off, you know, take him out of there. And they probably know that he's going to be, they might have a sweeper back, so they can probably do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, the cornerback's not going to leave his man. A corner forward stands free. So you generally, if you think about that for a second, there's a good chance that there's going to be a free player, you know, back there that could pick up that cornerback going forward.
Very rarely
you see a cornerback leaving his man and running up the field and leaving a forward stand and nobody marking him. You know, so you do have to that level of communication, and boys have to be able to see what's happening in the field, make decisions on the pitch and do that. So you do have to trust the players to make those right decisions at times. And you do have to work on that. If a player's dropping off, somebody else then picks him up as he's going through, and ensuring that you're keeping your stuff, you know, tied at the back, but and trying to keep a forward set. Listen, you don't want to play in a game where you're 15 men behind the ball, but especially very, very deep, I don't think it really works. I think you have to try and get the balance. Still hard to beat having six defenders and go man to man on their players, look after their own man, and then give some sort of cover system where you have an extra player dropping back or something, is great. Sometimes a corner forward just has to tail back and follow his man, if that has to be done. But you know, it's the game's so fluid. We have a game now like this that's moved on a lot in terms of tactics as well. If I'd say the biggest change in football, even from say 2000 or say from 2010 to now, has been a tactical change. You know, I think the game's moved on vastly tactically in 10 years or 12 years, whatever it is. And I think that this is where the difference is in the top teams. Like they tactically, they're able to adjust and change their plan on the pitch and not have to look back at it retrospectively and say, I wish I had done this, I wish I had done that. They change it then and there, and they're really good teams. That makes them successful.
Yeah, no, it definitely has, because I'm thinking, I suppose, back to the Down team that you coached in 2010. And, you know, that was the traditional type of football back then, I suppose. And, like, those days are gone. Sometimes I kind of, you know, reminisce about, not back into the 70s or 80s, because that was very, very slow stuff altogether. But the noughties was probably, the late 90s and the noughties was probably, I think, a very exciting time.
Oh, great football. Even look back, you know, if you look back even to the 90s, like, you know, from, you take from 1990, because that decade of football was mighty, like, you know.
Yeah.
I love that 90. Maybe just rose-tinted glass, look back when you're playing and you're at that age, you know, where you're playing football and you're looking up to the teams that were winning All Ireland, that team, you know. We had a great run also that time with Donegal down in Derry, all winning All Ireland, and we got beaten 95 in the final by the Dubs. But, you know, there's a great era. And if you look at the Mead teams and the Corks, that era in Galway and, geez, you know, Kerry.
Yeah,
it was great that time. You know, it really was a good era of football. And then we hit into the 2000s. I think things did change in the noughties. You know, I think that they just seemed to be a level of professionalism kicked in terms of, I don't mean this in professionalism as in, but I think we started using a lot more of the sports science that was available to us. And I think that then became a real driving force. Maybe the coaching strategies and coaching thoughts moved on through the noughties. And then this last 10 years just went on ahead again, you know. If you look at look at the condition of the players. If you look at the physical condition of players now compared to 25 years ago, like, you know, and the speed of the game and the movement of the game, you know, it really hasn't looked a good bit.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. You notice it in the compromise rules where there's not that huge difference between the physiques that there used to be. Come here, before I let you go, there's been some managers talking about, like, you've got 4 weeks now, right? So I don't know how you're going to manage the 4 weeks or when you're going to introduce little games, you know, and build the players up to the full contact and then, you know, full games. Like, there's some managers saying unlimited substitutions might work during the league, you know, to avoid that injury and bring lads in and out when they want, not stop the game. What would your thoughts on that be?
Yeah, I just read that. You know, it's not actually a bad idea because we have a very short period of time to get ready for the league. We really only have 3.5 weeks when you think about it to get yourself ready for the first league match. And then with the games coming thick and fast over the 3 weeks after, provided we're coming from zero, remember, you know, with no real preparation for that. So really the fact if you could have more reps, like really, we have 26 match day players. But you're allowed to use 21. You're only allowed to use 20. Isn't that? We're down to 5 subs. Last year, we've seen down to 5.
Yeah, it's down to 5.
So if you were able to expand that out and have it, you could roll your bench completely. Would it be great? And over the course of 3 games, it may give you an opportunity to get boys game time, which is ultimately what players want. They want to play. They want an opportunity to play in those games.
Yeah, you give all the lads a run and you might be able to take off some lads that are cramping.
Absolutely.
Up. Or, yeah.
Because we don't know. We're not really going to know, Colin, until we start playing matches, what way the players are. You know, we can train and we can do what we can in terms of our practice sessions over the next few weeks. But until we actually go into the heat of a battle, of a competitive match, we'll not really know where the players are. So that's going to be a real eye-opener the first weekend of the league. What level the players are physically, but also just for the, you know, the football level and their game sense and everything else. You know, it'll be a real shock to the system, I'd say.
It definitely will. Well, it's great to be back and it's great to have something to look forward to, Paddy. Come here, thanks very much for taking the time to chat to us.
No ball, Colin. Take care, boy.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.